Welcome to Life and Lattes with Paula, Andy and Lisa. Three friends, one table and you. Sit down and let's get three cups deep.
Good morning. Welcome. This is Life and Lattes. I'm so happy to be with you again this week. Sadly, Andy is not in studio with me, but that is sad for me and not sad for her. She is home, safe and sound, thank God, as safe and sound as you can be with the missiles raining down from Iran and rockets flying in from Hezbollah. But thank God, Andy is home. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Paulie.
Hello, and Lisa's also sitting next to Andy. So now I'm the one with the FOMO. Last week it was me and Andy and Lisa on the Zoom. Now I'm here on my lonesome.
On the Zoom, but with a delivery of Whispers chocolates from Paula in South Africa, and very happy.
Very happy. And you know that in December, Whispers does a snowball version, which are little white Whispers. They look amazing. So look out for those. And I'm not being paid by Whispers.
I have just been upgraded from Astros to Whispers.
When Andy was here, she referred to Astros as her war pills, and she was popping quite a few a day. So we are just so happy to all be together with you. And if you're listening, please WhatsApp us, 061-895-1019. And in today's show, we are going to be talking about what is the difference between a conversation, a confrontation, a conflict, and something much more healthy, a courageous conversation. That's coming up in Three Cups Deep. And for now, we are going to go to Espresso Yourself. Andy would like to share with us her dramatic journey that Dylan just mentioned was well documented, as is every part of Andy's life, well documented on her socials. And we can't wait to hear about it. And tell us about the long road to freedom, or as Howard put it, around the world in 80 hours and five flights.
Around the world in 80 hours. Yeah, sure. First of all, I just want to say that it was so wonderful to be there, to be with you, to be with my family, to have had that amazing time in South Africa. I really did savor every single drop. And it is so wonderful to be home. And I am so grateful and so relieved and so happy and so exhausted. And all of that is true.
And all of that at the same time. I would love you to read us. You wrote, as we said, very well-documented journey back home. You wrote something so beautiful. I'd love you to read the end part about coming home. It was so beautiful, and I feel like everybody should hear it. If they're not already following Andy on her LinkedIn or on her Facebook or on her Instagram or on her daily recharge, Andy's Daily Recharge, which is such a stunning daily dose of vitamin A, just positive, beautiful messaging, then you should. But she's going to share with us what she wrote.
Okay, so the ending is just as follows. South Africa, thank you for the unexpected gift of a little more time with precious loved ones, time I didn't know I would have and will treasure so deeply. And Israel, there is truly no place in the entire universe I would rather be returning to, running to, literally, especially now more than ever. Not even with several cancelled flights and a rescue flight story that honestly sounds more like a slightly dramatic Netflix series, as Howard perfectly put it, around the world in 80 hours, literally. But five coffees, five countries, 1,000 emotions, and one clear destination, home. As I finally make my way back, my heart carries a prayer. May the chaos and uncertainty all around us be replaced with peace and calm. May safety become a norm for us all one day soon, very soon. May our people, our world, know real rest again. And with tremendous overflowing gratitude, I whisper words that feel just so right in this moment. Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shehiyanu V'Kiyamanu V'Higiyanu Lazman Hazeh. Sometimes the journey home is messy, emotional, and truthfully a little absurd, maybe a lot absurd, but home is home and we do whatever it takes to get there. To give context, as the captain proudly and gently said over the announcement system, Ladies and gentlemen, we have landed safely in Israel. Everyone claps, but I just have tears, many. And just a few moments later, my first emergency alert blared through my phone, warning me of incoming missiles from Iran. A crazy reality, and one that reminds me that nothing is ever to be taken for granted. And in the very moments between relief and uncertainty, between landing and alarms, I understand something once again. Home is not the absence of fear. It is the presence of belonging. It is the place that calls your soul louder than comfort, louder than logic, and louder than calm skies. We don't run towards home because it's easy. We run towards home because it's ours. And perhaps that is the greatest miracle of all, that even in a world that feels unpredictable and fragile, the human heart always knows exactly where it belongs.
Absolutely magnificent. Let's take a break.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're back on Life and Lattes. We are so happy to be with you. Please join our table. WhatsApp us 061-895-1019. And before we move into Three Cups Deep, I'd love to hear Lisa's version of Espresso Yourself. What's happening in your world?
Oh, my God. I wish mine was as inspiring as Andy's.
Nothing's as inspiring as Andy. Don't even try.
I'm literally going, oh, my God. I'm back at Zoom school. And I'm pretty convinced at this point that my children are going to be the stupidest, most uneducated beings of their generation. I'm pretty profoundly aware of this. I think my son's face is about to blend into his iPad. I think it's just going to merge and melt. And I think I'm having like varying degrees of PTSD between COVID and the last war. And that, in case you guys don't know, Israeli kids are not going back to school until after Pesach. And there is some talk emerging that they may not go back at all until the summer. And so that is what I'm ventilating at, because I like to think I am a decent mum, but I am a mum who needs children to go to school.
You must be the exception to the rule. We all just love having them around all the time.
I just don't want to be 100% responsible for their education, because they are actually going to come out quite stupid, which is really scary for me.
Well, as Paula says, depending on how you define educated.
It depends how you define educated. And
I'm currently relying heavily on YouTube, and I think that can't be a good thing.
But that is just too funny that your son's face is blending into his iPad. And you know what? He's at least got an excuse. He's got a war going on around him and no school. What is our excuse as for the rest of our children? I've got
Speaking of Zoom, Paul, there was this meme out, did you see it, of one of the fighter pilots, the mom, and she's in her F-35, and she gets a call from her saying, your son isn't in Zoom class, and she's literally like flying over Iran in her fighter jet, and she's getting this Zoom notification, your son hasn't shown up for Zoom.
Oh, that is too funny. And you told me yesterday
I'm running. I literally run to work because that's how I breathe, which is really hilarious. I ran to work and then I didn't realize my husband's doing the same thing. So at some point I phoned my 15-year-old. I was like, Eden, you need to get Ruffy up for Zoom. She called me back an hour later. She goes, I tried. He's still sleeping. I give up. We're not doing this.
Oh, my goodness. Run a mile if you can.
Gosh.
But here's a WhatsApp magic, Anne. Thanks so much for your post. Listen to the birds, not the boom. Stay safe, Karen. Happy you are home. And that's Karen in Israel.
Gosh. Okay.
So, it's a lot. It really is a lot. And it is what it is right now. I mean, if I'm going to express it myself, I spent 3.5 hours yesterday at the Edenvale Licensing Department with my son, who we just had to go there and pay for his booking to write.
I think I'd rather have missiles.
To write his test next in 2 weeks' time. He phoned before. He said, can I use my passport to pay for the booking? Yes, you can. We arrived 3.5 hours in the queue. I set up shop. I was actually working at the licensing department. I wish I could have taken a picture. I set up shop at a desk, I had my laptop.
Look at you being so productive and efficient.
I was extremely productive and efficient. And he sat in the queue with very little entertainment because his phone died. And gets to the front and they say, sorry, you need to have an ID. And he was just, you know, he was so upset about it. And I don't know if I was helpful mommy at all, but I was like, radical acceptance, Ari. Radical acceptance. It is what it is. And I said, also, Ari, welcome to South Africa. This is actually the norm. You seem so shocked and surprised that you spent 3.5 hours and then got nothing for your efforts. And that's, you know, just welcome. You've officially been welcomed as a citizen of this beautiful country. So, yeah. But radical acceptance, it just is what it is. And there's no use putting any more energy into an already kind of annoying and frustrating situation. And I actually found it quite great because I actually had 3.5 hours to focus on my work and I was quite chuffed. But I get it from his side, not so much. Lise, what do you think?
I'm glad that you managed to multitask, Paula.
I did. I really did. But can I ask you something? I had the insight after the conversation that maybe radical acceptance is something you can choose for yourself. It is not really something you can tell someone else to choose. You know, it's liberating when you have the realization that it is what it is and there's no use fighting reality. But I feel like, you know, it's the kind of thing you can't really tell someone who's fighting the reality. Just maybe they need their space to vent. What do you think, Lise?
I think we have to give people space. I don't even know if it's to vent as much as to feel their disappointment or their frustration. And when we jump to you've got to radically accept it, it's like we've missed a step for them. Mm. You know, like after radical acceptance comes after I can hold my frustration, disappointment, hurt, sadness, whatever, and then I can get there.
You see.
And I think as parents, really want to save our kids from those negative experiences, so we jump ahead.
Right.
And I think sometimes we have to slow that down a little.
We do. Not mine. Another fine mommy moment from Paula Levine.
Oh, Paula.
But we're learning on the job.
Educated by YouTube. Call me.
Okay. I think we are ready to get three cups deep into the idea of courageous conversations. And, you know, this whole topic came about through one of our listeners messaging me and saying, you know, how do we communicate when there really is a struggle and we struggle to keep our calm and the other person is not listening? And how do you have that conversation? And when we were preparing for the show, Lisa was saying, you know, conversation should be like a ping pong, you know? Ping pong, meaning you ping, the other person pongs, and it's a dialogue. You are both there in the room, fully present in that space, as opposed to, you know, a soliloquy, which is just kind of talking to a brick wall and there's nobody listening. But we are going to unpack this much, much deeper, much, much further after this break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're listening to Life and Lattes, and I'm Paula. If you are struggling to hear who is who in the zoo, let's just give a shout out. Andy, let's hear what your voice sounds like.
Hello.
Hello.
My voice sounds like a mix of exhaustion and jet lag.
And South African and Israeli. And and Lisa, let's hear what your voice sounds like.
I think I'm the one with the weird accent.
The weird,
I'm sorry.
Somewhat Australian, somewhat South African, somewhat Israeli, just because I got stopped at a coffee shop the other day and was told that they love our show, but she's not always sure who is who in the zoo. And I said, well, you also have to listen to the content because we all say very different things. And but apart from that, you can just try pick out those accents. So, but in the end of the day, we are all three South African Jewish mommies, so I get the confusion totally. So we are talking about ping pong. So my husband and my sons would love to tune in and listen to ping pong because they are major table tennis fans, as are my nephews in Israel. But unfortunately, it's not that kind of ping pong. We are talking about courageous conversations, how to have a conversation or a confrontation. And I just love this I don't know if you guys know Linda Levy. She's written the most incredible book, Freedom to Choose, which is not quite published yet, but on its way. And she calls a confrontation a carefrontation, which is such a beautiful reframe. But how do we have those hard conversations? Andy, tell us. What do we do? How do we approach it?
I think there's a few things around approaching a courageous conversation. The first thing is that we have to understand what our resistance is to it in the first place. You know, what are we really afraid of? And there's a lot to unpack there, a lot of resistance to having hard conversations or brave conversations or courageous conversations is around a fear, is around a disappointment, is around a consequence of, will this possibly make things worse?
Right.
And if you think about, you know, topics that come up in courageous conversations, they are usually around a competing value, or they are usually, if you take the workplace, even asking for a raise, a salary increase, a really hard conversation for a lot of team members to prepare for. And then, of course, in relationships and all interpersonal communication, there is this concern around, you know, I don't want to cause harm. Something has happened and I want to illuminate an issue, but I also kind of want to ensure and guarantee that the outcome is a desired one. And when things involve other people, we don't always have control over that.
We don't have control.
So I think we do have to, we do have to give space for that resistance. And what are we concerned about? What are we afraid about? We have to name that.
You know, as a recovering people pleaser, as well as a recovering perfectionist, I'm recovering from quite a lot of things, but recovering people pleaser, you know, my go-to is, you know, let's just keep the peace. And my brother once said that peace without truth is not really peace. Yeah. So it was just an amazing sentence for me. Also, he's a rabbi, so I take what he says quite seriously. And it just made me think, you know, keeping the peace, but at the expense of what's true and what's real, is that really peace? I don't know. Lise, what are your thoughts?
I also think we always think of, in terms of conversation being a confrontation. Like people often say, well, I don't want to have that because I'm just not confrontational. I'm not good at these things. Mm. And I think we forget that actually not just a deep and a true and an authentic conversation doesn't have to be confrontational. Mm. I do think there are skills to communication. There are better and worse ways to communicate with people. And when we learn to communicate well, I think we can say very hard things. And I'll share with you even, you know, one of the things that people hate is we hate being told what we think or who we are, you know, or even what to do. We don't like it. You know, if I say to my 10-year-old son, Rafi, take a sweater, it's cold outside, what's he going to say to me?
I'm not cold.
In fact, he's one different. Okay. He says his new thing is I'm built different.
Oh, cute. I love that.
And he probably is.
Right. But you know, I always say to people, you know, when it comes to conversation, you want to stay in your space.
Yeah.
So what do I mean by that? If you could imagine like a hoop around you, you know, your personal physical space, you know, if you're sitting at the beach, you've got your towel,
yeah,
a hula hoop, right? You've got your towel at the beach and you want someone else to have their towel a good 2 meters away. And if they come like Israelis, just sit on your towel, you're like, get out my space. You're in my space, right? We have a close talker, right? When people talk too close, we kind of want to push them away. You're like, oh, I can like smell you. You're a bit close, right? Just like we have physical space, we have emotional space.
Yeah.
And the trick of conversation and communication, it sounds a little techy when I talk, especially over radio, because I'm a bit more descriptive in real life, but I think it's such an important idea to say people have emotional space. When I want to have a hard conversation or communication with someone, I want to stand in my space. Yeah. And the rule is, I learned this from an amazing teacher. I'll give a shout out to her. Her name is Dr. Susan Heitler. And she taught me the saying that says, talk about yourself. which means stand in your space, your hula hoop around your body, your physical and emotional space, and speak about yourself. I feel, I think, I experience, I whatever you want to say about yourself. And you can say very, very scary things. Mm. I feel really scared, or I feel really heartbroken when you yell at me, or I feel really downtrodden right now. You can say very deep things. But when it comes to someone else, you have to ask about them. Mm-hmm. So rather than saying, you are such an awful person, or you always behave that way, it's very different when I say, I feel really angry when you behave that way.
Mm.
And that, so I've just described what they've done. And then I ask them about their hula hoop, a genuine question. How come you think that way? How come you behave that way? What makes you ask that? Like, really bring curiosity to someone else's thinking and behavior.
Mm.
Mm.
I will add that the question why is not a question. Why did you do that? Or why did you go there? Like, inherently,
why are you always blah, blah, blah? Yes.
Why do you always do that?
Yeah, that's not a question. That's not curiosity. That's judgment.
That's an accusation.
Exactly. Right. And people shut down.
Yeah.
But when I stand in my circle and I ask them about theirs, suddenly people can be in common. And I can say very hard things and I can ask very hard things as long as I'm genuinely curious.
Yeah.
You know, even on the most basic example, let's use Rafi and the sweater again. If I say to Rafi, hey, Rafi, I feel kind of cold. I think it's cold outside.
Mm.
How about you go outside and check the weather and see if you want to take a sweater?
Right.
The truth is, he does go outside. He goes outside, he checks the weather, and then he comes back in and he says, yeah, I'm still built different.
I love that. It's so cute.
But at least I haven't stepped in his space to say, you need to be this way, or you need to think this way, or this is who you are, which is going to get a knee-jerk reaction pushing me away.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's also gold. To get ready for that, there has to be some real self-awareness and some real reflection before you can even start the communication. There has to be a moment where you know, in coaching, we often have a tool. We call it the three positions. It's a very fun tool. It's quite powerful, and it doesn't actually change the event or the issue that is bothering you or triggering you or even what happened, but it does activate tremendous compassion and empathy in terms of, I don't have to arrive at that conversation as, you know, as with such intense heightened emotions as I would without it. So in a nutshell, first position is when I experience a situation as myself. So I'm always me, right? Something has happened, I'm upset by it, but I'm seeing the whole experience as myself. That's first position. And we all very good at first position because it's us being ourselves. Second position is where I can actually step into the other person's, it's more than just their shoes. It's way more than just going into their shoes. It's saying I almost become them. I remember once having an invitation to speak to one of my kids' math teachers about something. And I was so annoyed by the message and the way she had phrased this invitation. And from first position, I was so justified to be so angry. And then when I stepped into second position and I had to remind myself, it's the middle of lockdown, this teacher is teaching 40 16-year-old boys. most of them have probably not even done what was expected of them. She's probably got 40 moms messaging her. Like, the minute I was really in second position and in her world, it didn't change the reality or change the facts.
Mm.
But what it did do was give me a tremendous glimpse and insight into her experience.
Wow, I love this.
A second position is where you become the other person. And it's extremely powerful, just in terms of compassion and understanding, not in terms of changing what transpired. Third position is where you become this like fly on the wall. You almost become this like neutral observer to the situation. And two amazingly interesting things happen in third position.
Can we say a butterfly on the wall? I don't like flies.
A butterfly on the wall.
Okay.
So in third position, two amazing things happen. Number one is you get to see things that first position and second position don't see. Mm-hmm. And you get to see the dynamic between first and second position, which they don't see. So if two people are having a really difficult moment or need to have a courageous conversation because something has happened, the butterfly on the wall gets to see the event from a more neutral kind of zoomed out position. So they have access to different data that the two of them are missing from their own subjective experience. Mm. And you get to see this dynamic, which is really helpful. And we can all train ourselves to kind of move between first, second, and third position just to get an added dimension, because we are only seeing the world through subjective reality.
This is
and we
amazing.
Are not
seeing
the world from common sense or objective reality.
So this is actually before the courageous conversation happens.
This is setting yourself up to really, before you have the courageous conversation, bear in mind that we are seeing the world through a very limited subjective lens. In Hebrew, we often say, "Hamapa eina hashetach." The map is not the terrain. What's going on in your mental map of how you are perceiving the situation, your filters, your own personal experience is yours, and it's legitimate, but it doesn't mean it's the only interpretation or the only vantage point.
Vantage point. I love that. And you know what? This is really important that this is the first step before the conversation, because, you know, I remember once I went to a shiva house, and it was a very elderly lady, and she'd lost her husband. And I said to her, "What's the secret of your happy marriage?" And she said, "We never went to bed angry." And it was lovely, and it really did sound beautiful, and it sounds amazing. But I don't think that you have the most effective conversations when you are angry. And they've actually done studies. John and Julie Gottman are these marriage gurus. And they did many, many studies of couples. And what they found was they would actually have a couple in like a recording studio with the cameras on and everything, and they would just be having a conversation. When things would start to get heated and they would start to get angry with each other, they would send in a technician and say, "Sorry, we are actually having technical difficulties. Please, can you just hold this conversation until we've sorted it out?" And what they did was they would come back in 5 minutes later, or 10 minutes later, or 15, or 20 minutes later. And they found that 20 minutes later is how long it took for the body to actually calm down from that fight response, from that amygdala hijack where they were just now shooting from the hip, and then carry on a conversation from that wise mind, from that, you know, curious space. Yes, from the curious space.
I think when we talk about conversation, it's so important. You know, sometimes we get so into our experience of how angry we are or how burdensome this thing feels, and I need to talk about it, particularly in marriage, but also with children, also with friends. It's so important to be able to say, just because I'm riled up on a feeling doesn't mean I have to deal with it straight away. Like, sometimes, is the person I want to talk to hungry? Is the person I want to talk to tired? You know, like, my husband once laughed at me. He said to me, "You know, Lee's like, I'm really trying very hard to work on becoming a better communicator with you, but it's 11 p.m. and I just want to go to bed."
Oh, that is so beautiful.
Can we just not do this now? But I think it's so important. And for those of us who are...
The timing is huge.
Yeah, timing is everything.
Who get really angry, I'd speak for myself, but I'm a massive sulker. Like, I really need time to calm down. And so for someone to force me into a conversation when I'm angry will 100% mean that I'm going to say things I don't mean. And also, I can think really quickly on my feet, which means I'll really say things I don't mean. And with reckless. But if you are that kind of person, I think it's really important to also hold who you're speaking to, because sometimes people get really anxious while you're calming down, because they feel you like leaving and you're never coming back, you know? And so I hear the Gottman thing, and I do agree with it. And sometimes I would go even further. Everyone's like, never go to bed angry. But sometimes you're too angry to talk and you just need to sleep on it, you know?
Yes.
But I think the sentence of, "I'm too angry," or I'm just not calm enough yet. But
I need
coming,
time. I'm coming back.
I'm coming back.
Yeah. I'm coming back.
And someone knowing I'm not avoiding the conversation, I'm coming back to it. I'm just not ready for it.
When I'm more accessible and available to have it.
I think that's a game changer.
You know, I love that so much. Brené Brown in the Dare to Lead did a checklist where she shares with her teams and her leadership teams, executive teams, but it's true for all relationships, a checklist before you are ready. And I'll just share some of the items on this checklist. It's so aligned with what we've just spoken about. So here are some of the items. I'm ready now to sit next to you rather than across from you. I'm willing to put the problem in front of us rather than between us, or slide it towards you. I'm ready to listen, ask questions, and accept that I may not fully understand the issue. I'm ready to acknowledge what you do well instead of picking apart all your mistakes. I recognize your strengths and how you can use them to address the challenge. I can hold you accountable without shaming or blaming. I am open to owning my own part. I can genuinely thank someone for their efforts rather than criticize them for their failing. I can talk about how resolving this challenge will lead to growth and opportunity. I can model the vulnerability and openness that I also want from you. I am aware of my own power dynamics, implicit bias, and stereotypes.
But no one really is, are we? How aware are we going into a courageous conversation? How self-aware do we need to be? I mean, I think the first step back to the Gottman study is literally to become aware of what's going on in your body as you're talking to someone. You know, what's going on inside your hula hoop? Is your blood pressure feeling, you know, like it's rising? Do you have that feeling, you know, wherever you feel anger in your body or whatever the feeling is, like just to literally to notice it and to become aware of it. Let's go deeper into this after the break.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
You're listening to Life and Lattes with me, Paula, Andy, and Lisa, and we are three cups deep into courageous conversations. And wow, I mean, I hope that this has been helpful for you, because I'm finding this really, really illuminating. Such unbelievable concepts and just off the tip of these ladies' tongues, just incredible. Lise, you looked like you had something to say.
Yeah, because I want to say something particularly when it comes to conversations and marriages, and also toward children. But, you know, one of the best things I learned also from Dr. Susan Heitler, actually, was this concept that marriage is for grown-ups. And it sounds, you know, it sounds like, oh, really? But marriage is truly an adulting event. Unless you're an adult, you're not ready to get married, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes what happens when we get, when we want to have conversation, or we get into an argument, or we really want to talk about heavy things, the part in us that has been the most triggered is usually our child parts. You know, Paul, when you were thinking about, could you first just see what's going on in your hula hoop, like what's happening in your body physically? Another question I sometimes say to people is, in that moment, how old do you feel?
Wow, I love that.
And often the part of me that feels wounded or hurt is an old little six-year-old, or that seven-year-old who that old story that got triggered. And before I come to my partner, I don't want to bring my six-year-old. And I want to be calm enough and in my circle enough and curious enough to say, could I actually bring my 47-year-old or my 27 or the adults in me to have this conversation? I can notice the six-year-old. And it does require self-awareness. It does. But you know what? We're all capable of evolving and becoming self-aware. And if we're not willing to sort of check in, that's when we start to become narcissistic, right? And we all have narcissistic parts, but that real part of me that can say, what's going on with me and how old do I feel? And could I notice the child in me that feels really wounded, but could I talk from the adult in me? And it's such a different way to approach someone without bringing all my old wounded parts, you know?
That is absolutely brilliant. Brilliant.
You know, we do a pots party often where we have different pots, and each pot actually does, it's called a pots party. It's like this whole feast. But basically each pot does offer certain gifts, and it's reminding me of the different roles that our different pots play in our relationships, in our performance, in how we show up in our day-to-day life. And each pot does serve a purpose. Each pot really has a role to play. And, you know, if we think about even just being able to ask ourselves, apropos growing our self-awareness and our ability to evolve, I love how you said that we all have that ability to evolve. It's so true. Then, you know, owning my role, like what role am I playing in this current drama? If you look at the Kottman drama triangle, we all playing a certain role in a situation that isn't working, whether we are, you know, in the Kottman drama triangle, they refer to the victim, the persecutor, and the rescuer. And this, our capacity to say, you know, if I'm a victim in this current dynamic, then I'm showing up as pretty powerless and I am blaming the world or everyone else. And if I'm a rescuer, then I somehow feel like I have to fix it all. And if I'm the persecutor, then, you know, I'm operating from a belief that control will always keep me safe. And those dynamics are just going to exacerbate the drama. They're just going to keep the problem there. And the evolution from the Kottman drama triangle is the empowerment triangle, where in the same way that different parts of me show up in different roles, I can step into a new role. I can deliberately and intentionally and consciously choose to assume a new role with a lot of sincerity. Mm-hmm. And I can say, you know what, this no longer works for me. I don't want to be in this drama triangle anymore. I actually want to operate from a new role. And that new role.
I feel like that's my new go-to sentence. Yeah. I don't want to be in this drama triangle.
I don't want to be in this drama triangle anymore. So I can become a creator. Mm. And if you're a creator, you're no longer a victim. You have choice.
Wow.
That is an awesome place to be. Or if you no longer want to be
a persecutor,
you can be a challenger. You know, you can honestly challenge someone, or you can step into what we call the role of coach. And that's amazing. I can support a person without needing to rescue them.
You know, and I think this becomes fascinating in marriages. You know, when you look in marriages, I think most couples fight about the same stuff, just in different versions. You know, we spiral around the same conversations again and again and again. Mm. And the issues that we usually had when we first got married are the same issues you have 20-something years later, just voiced in different ways.
Literally, and not even voiced in different ways, voiced in the exact same way. Me and my husband, 22 years, we have one fight. It is the same fight we've always had. Comes up about once a month or you know, once every 2 months. And it's like, what, this again?
Yeah.
I would love to know how to have a fresh, new conversation about this, you know, the same issue. I saw something really, I wrote an article many years ago on marriage, and it was about having, you know, about conflict. And this is the same thing, John Gottman. He speaks about two categories of marital conflict. They can either be resolved. It's a conflict that can be resolved. Or it's a perpetual conflict, which means it will be part of your lives forever in one form or another. And he says that 69% of marital conflicts are perpetual problems, meaning they cannot and will not ever be solved, which sounds alarming. It sounds depressing. But he explains that a perpetual conflict does not come from real world problems outside of the relationship. It comes from the interaction between the marriage partners and the core personalities of each partner colliding against each other, and that personalities cannot change, but they don't need to change, because the core personality is in fact what drew you to your partner in the first place. This is what you once loved and appreciated about him or her. And I'm telling you now, with my conflict with my husband, it's just uncanny. It's exactly that same thing. But when one partner tries to change the core personality of the other, or they want them to give up that core, that is actually abuse. So we're not trying to change the person. We're not trying to make them give up who they are. We're just trying to have a new conversation. We may not even solve the conflict, but we may have some insight into each other, a little bit more tolerance for the next time the issue comes up again, a little bit more compassion when that wound is triggered. And I think that's kind of sometimes what it is. Lise, what do you think?
Totally, totally. And I think it's really like being able to say, like, can I, you know, without changing, I think it's really practical, give people examples. Like, what are we saying? So I'll use an example. For example, me, Lisa Kramer, ADHD plus means I'm terrible with time, right? I understand what 5 minutes is, but I don't understand what 5 minutes is. It doesn't commute in my head, even now, what I can do in 5 minutes, because I know what I think you can do in 5 minutes, you can't actually do in 5 minutes, but it doesn't commute. It doesn't work. So I'm perpetually struggling with time. Now, if I come up against a child part in somebody else, me being difficult with time could be really personalized. I don't care about them. I don't care about the place we're going to, right? Like thoughtlessness. You could really become feeling like a real abandoned child. And Lisa needs to change and get good at time. And that will be a perpetual argument, because Lisa's probably never going to, you know, unless I'm on Ritalin, I'm not getting good at time, right?
Yeah.
But if someone can say, oh, Lisa's ADHD, that's me to deal with. That's mine to hold, mine to apologize for, mine to whatever. But rather than getting angry with her, which isn't going to help, it's just going to put me into my own shame cycle, could I be able to say, this isn't about me? This is Lisa and her rubbish time management, or her rubbish understanding of time, or the ADHD. And either I've got to go without her, or, you know, my husband happens to be a very calm, relaxed person, but he actually taught himself how to play guitar while he was waiting for me to get ready.
That's a lot of time waiting. He actually taught himself guitar.
It was such a relief to me, A, that there wasn't a child part there. And if there was, he didn't bring it at me. You know, and that it was just saying, okay, like I don't have to personalize whatever. This is going to require two adults.
That's
and
brilliant.
And then the use of time is my thing. And it's not really about me in relation to him, you know?
That's amazing. Quick segue, quick ad for something called a time timer, which I bought for my daughter. It's an amazing little device that visually counts down the time. So you can literally see the 10 minutes ticking down or the 5 minutes. And it's a brilliant ADHD tool. So Google that and then you may not have an excuse, but nobody will get really brilliant at the guitar. But anyway, carry on.
But yeah, you know, I remember when I did actually meet a friend of mine who turned to me, and she stood very much in her circle. And she looked at me and she said, when you are late, she just named the behavior, I feel like you don't care about me. And wow. So she wasn't telling me to be different. She wasn't telling me how to whatever. She was really in awareness. And it allowed me. And then she went, how come it's so hard for you? And she was really curious.
That is amazing.
I want to say something about that interaction. It's brilliant. You know, Paula's obsessed with my acronyms, and this one's not even mine, but it is so good and so practical. And it's called GIFT, spelling the word G-I-F-T. And when you do need to have a hard, brave, courageous conversation, this is a fantastic model to use. And you and your friend just did that. So the G is give the fact. You know, without an opinion, without emotions, what just transpired? Like, let's actually just align on the issue of we were meant to meet at 8 and you came at 8:30. Like, let's just both be on the same page that is the actual thing that's bothering me, okay? The I is my individual interpretation. From where I'm sitting, it seems like you don't respect me. Or from where I'm sitting, it feels like this coffee date wasn't important to you. Or so it's my interpretation, it's my trigger, it's my experience, it's the impact this is having on me. F is future change. You know what? How could we possibly do this differently? I'm mindful of my own triggers. I'm totally respectful of your ADHD. So how could we possibly do this differently? What is a future change we would love to create together? how could it be different tomorrow?
Bring your guitar.
And tea, yeah, bring a guitar, exactly. And tea is the take new action together. Like, what is a new commitment to doing things differently? And I don't believe that confrontation or communication is ever around changing someone's core personality. I really do agree with that. And at the same time, I also don't believe we can run around our lives saying, well, that's just the way I am.
100%.
I love this gift. It's so memorable. It is so easy. You know, it is giving
back. Don't get to cop out of hard things by saying, well, that's just who I am. I can actually flex my style. I don't have to break. I just need to bend. Mm. And I can flex my style and show up a little bit differently in a communication because we've aligned on what are the facts, what is your individual interpretation of this, what is mine, what is the future change we would love to see, how could it possibly look better or different tomorrow, and what is one action we're willing to commit to taking to make it so.
And and on the topic of the future change, it reminds me of that same article where John Gottman suggests that we share what is the dream that's or the wish behind this conflict. So, I mean, I don't know how to really make it practical, but, you know, maybe in the issue of coming late, your friend's wish is, I wish that I felt that you really care and this coffee date is important to you. That's my wish. And you can absolutely fulfill that wish in other ways, I guess. At the same time, you can't change your core personality unless you have a time timer. I think it's just, you know, go back to, because we can get very stuck on the facts and we can kind of sometimes have a lot of conflict around the facts or the incident or the issue. But can we take a step back and what's the dream? What do you really want out of this conversation? What future change do you want in your relationship? And then what practical action can you take? So that is really, really profound. We're going to take a break and then we need to come back and wrap up the show.
Make your Pesach shopping more kosher and more delicious at Sandringham Spar and Tops. From matzah and macaroons to gefilte fish, herrings, roast chicken and all your Pesach essentials, you'll find everything you need for Yom Tov. Stock up on Pesach wines, grape juice, fresh produce, and all the favorites that make your Seder table special. It's kosher, it's value, it's beautiful. Visit us in store for the best range of kosher for Pesach products and make your Pesach table unforgettable. Sandringham Spar and Tops, sharing your celebrations.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
You're back listening to Life and Lattes with me, Paula, with Andy and with Lisa. And we got a WhatsApp from Ariella saying, so if you shouldn't ask a question with why, what should you ask instead when you're curious about what's going on for someone?
Ariella, how and what are great questions. When I say to someone, how did you put that together? Or what made you think that way? It's with why. There is no curiosity. How and what are genuine, curious questions. And when I want to ask a question of someone, really ask a question. You know, I always say to people, don't ask a question you know the answer to. That's not a question, you know, or you've already decided what the right answer is. Yep. Like really genuine questions. And genuine questions always start with how and what. And the difference that has for someone is actually quite profound because they really get a sense that you're asking them. Yeah. And when I feel I'm being asked and there's curiosity, I will take time to think to really answer you. I can only tell you to practice with this and play with it. It is profound.
We're going to have to wrap up our show, but I would love to end with just one thing from Andy. Andy has such an amazing insight, a breakthrough that one of her clients shared. Tell us about that in the quickest time possible.
In the quickest time possible, I had a client who was avoiding a courageous conversation for many reasons, which are obvious to all of us because we're all human and we have the shared humanity. But he did say to me when I asked him, and what happened? What actually happened? How did that land for you? How did that work out? You know, you've avoided this hard conversation for so long. you know, so it avoided a huge conflict that you didn't want to have with someone. And he turned around and he said to me, yeah, I didn't land up having the conflict with them, but I landed up starting one within myself.
Mm. And that was Andy's bell-worthy moment where she rings her breakthrough bell for her clients. Guys, we are out of time, and it has just been so magical. As always, we are so look forward to seeing you next week, and to for our listeners joining us and WhatsApping us and being part of our conversation. Thank you for being here with us on Life and Lattes.